Hello, everybody.
Yo.
Welcome to the new 52 episode of Big Planet Comics podcast.
We're rebooting, y'all.
Yeah, we're rebooting with all new 52. We're going to do 52 more episodes. So does this mean we've been doing it for a year? I think it's been longer than a year.
We've taken a few breaks, but
we've taken a lot of breaks.
Kind of the anniversary year thing.
We love to break. So my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And we're doing the thing that we do.
We're doing it and doing it so well.
That is the podcast, in case you were wondering what that thing is.
True.
So what should I say? You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
For our new listeners.
Do we have new listeners?
Apparently, based on how many people have been listening.
I don't like to big myself up, but we're doing pretty good numbers these days.
But tell your friends.
Yeah, tell everybody to listen to this.
Tell your enemies.
Because you can talk about it around the water cooler or on the internet forums. Mm-hmm.
Yep. On the BBS.
Yeah, so I said you can subscribe on iTunes, but what can other people do?
You can check us out on Facebook.
What is that webpage address?
Facebook.com/MySpace. /MySpace/BigPlanetComics.
/LinkedIn/Friendster.
That works too.
/ not / you guys.
Yeah, that takes you to the wrong page. Don't do it.
Yeah, it takes you to the Big Planet Comics evil page, the mirror. Yeah. It's like our regular Facebook page, except it has a goatee.
Yeah.
Except all of us have shaved.
Now it's true. Yeah, we're not as hirsute in the mirror universe. Jared, if people want to do something at us, what can they do?
They can throw things at us, or they can tweet us at Big Planet Comics.
That is true.
Nice.
Anything interesting going on on the Twitter?
No. Some people were like, "Yo, where can I get that black set at?" And I'm like, "We got it." And then some people are like, "Where can I get that Walking Dead 100 at?" I'm like, "We got it. It's what we do."
Yeah.
Nice.
Good work.
Thanks, man.
Good work.
That was a lame
the token late response.
Yeah. I pressed the other button and it didn't do anything.
Yeah, but tweet at us. Tell us what's going on. It's lonely on the Twitterverse.
Yeah, and if you're curious about other things, I can tell you some stuff. Like on July 28th, we have a signing.
Woo!
Matt Dembiski.
That guy.
Two signings with him.
He's signing his book, Shark.
Shark.
Or Gazak. Yeah, that's going to be at 11 to 1 at our College Park store, 3 to 5 at our Vienna location.
Mm-hmm. And the guy who colored the book, Evan Keeling, who's also a local guy, and he will be at both of those as well.
And then August 18th, this is new information.
New and super exciting.
I wish I had clapping. that is Mike Rex, the artist and writer.
Correct.
Of Fangbone.
That's awesome.
Which is
third grade barbarian.
A Fang favorite.
It is. Ah, nice.
He's going to be... I feel like we're like the zoo crew right now. He's going to be also at our Vienna location at 11 to 1 in our College Park store from 3 to 5.
God, it's going
to
be...
Vienna's awesome. Location. College Park, just a store.
Yeah.
Yep.
But this is the location. So what have you guys been up to?
I went to Memphis and Nashville.
Memphis.
And Nashville.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville. Sorry. Okay.
You gotta do it.
Yeah, I feel better now.
Yeah, it's cool.
Did you go to Graceland?
I went to Graceland. I went to Sun Records. I went to the Stax Soul Museum, which was amazing.
Did you go to Dollywood?
I did not. Dollywood's way...
I want to go to Dollywood.
Did you go to the Grand Ole Opry?
Nope.
I went there. It was pretty cool. Grand.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it old?
No.
Was it Opry?
I guess it was old.
Did you go to Waffle House?
Nope.
Oh, man. Missed opportunity.
I know.
Cool.
I did have some peanut butter syrup over banana pancakes.
That sounds good.
That sounds Elvis-y.
It nearly killed me, and it was very Elvis-y.
Elvis isn't dead, so don't even go there.
No, I'm saying it nearly killed me.
What about you, Nick? What have you been up to?
I saw Brave the other day.
Okay. How was that?
That was awesome. It was really good. I was surprised. I heard some people were... some mixed reviews of it, but it was really good.
I liked it.
Yeah,
I guess people are just like, it's not as good as the like best movies that ever came out,
right? Yeah, unlike every other Pixar film except for Cars.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's definitely Zing. Great.
Anything else going on?
No.
What?
Yeah.
The reason I keep asking you is because I'm trying to think about what I've been doing.
I don't think I've been doing anything.
Really?
Yeah.
I gave you a whole week off. Oh, wait. That was me.
Nick and I have been playing we've got a little group going. We're playing the Marvel role-playing game.
Oh, yeah.
So if anybody says we're biased towards Marvel, you guys are crazy. What are you talking about? But it's been pretty fun. We've been doing dumb stuff.
Wasn't that where you play heroes who go around and beat up the vigilante known as Bam-Tan?
We too. Bam-Tan and
Jerk
and Whooper Man. We had fun. We went one of the guys in our group, Julian, who you might know from the podcast. He plays as Captain America.
Nice. What? He plays the Captain America?
The Steve Rogers.
That's pretty cool.
One G in that last name. and one G to rule them all, Julian May. He jumped out of a helicopter first thing in the first game and landed on his head and got a concussion.
What? He's supposed to land with a shield below him. Oh.
That's what, yeah, just like
the train this up.
Just like the real Captain America.
The funniest part was like, why didn't you just wait for the helicopter to land? He's like, oh, I could have.
Well, and he had awesome.
It gave him a motorcycle so he could he could drive out of it like and do like a cool like Miss Piggy Great Muppet Caper kind of entrance.
Which is how Captain America plans all of his movies.
Yeah, he's like, I'm totally gonna pull a Miss Piggy. but he didn't do it. He just landed on his head. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's it.
Unheroic.
So we got a bunch of news this episode though.
Why? Ooh. What happened?
There was a little thing called San Diego Comic Convention. I believe it's the full name.
And something important happened there.
Newsworthy? Five important things happened there.
Five.
X-Men show is back, y'all. That's the first
amazing
announcement.
Why does it say CCI 2012? What is CCI?
Comic-Con International.
Oh, so is it SDCCI?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just wait till they drop the SD, then we know it's gone big.
It's going to be HD.
Yeah.
Bit of news. So our first bit of news.
Go on.
Scott Lobdell.
Oh, no! our buddy and pal.
Wait, we like him. Go on.
Do we?
Our buddy and pal.
He announced, why would you ever even announce this? He announced that Tim Drake, who many people will know as Robin, was never Robin. He was always Red Robin.
No, he's Robin.
No, but he was always Red Robin.
He was the second, or was he the third?
Well, he was the ward of Batman, but he was always Red Robin. He was never Robin.
According to the new 52 continuity.
All right, I'm done. Sorry, DC. You lost me.
What? First of all, I'm assuming somebody asked him about this and he gave this information as opposed to like...
Yeah, I wonder if he just showed up at Comic-Con. It's like, I have one announcement. Tim Drake, Red Robin, never Robin.
And then he like dropped his microphone.
Everyone was like, who are you? And he's like, Scott Lobdell.
And they were like, oh, okay.
Read my comics.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
it just people must be mad about this.
I'm
right?
sure people are furious.
Like, I'm not mad. Well, I kind of. I'm not mad.
I'm just like what?
I ain't mad.
Like really?
But I love all those like the Jeff Loeb Teen Titans comics.
Yeah,
and he's Robin in all those. Did those not happen?
He was Red Robin in all those.
Oh, and they were just like they were drawn wrong.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
He was casual. Like, just call me Robin. We worked together on a team.
Well, that's like serious though. Like his last name is Robin, and his first name
like
is Red. So
around.
He's like, call me Robin. Like how, like the Terminator's name is Arnold Terminator, but like he's like, I'm the Terminator.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So stupid news. That is non-news.
I got a thing for you.
Oh, that's my. I don't know.
That's a bad news sign.
Yeah. How about we move on?
Wait, what did you say, Jared? What do you got?
Nothing. I just want to move on.
Welcome to the Zoo Crew. Okay, so now we're moving on to good news. Mm-hmm. Good news, guys.
I don't know. After that one, I'm a little paranoid. You're
so
joking with me.
Brian Wood.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Always a better way to start a sentence than Scott Lobdell. is writing a Star Wars series, which you would think, whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
But, well, no, you wouldn't because it's Brian Wood. You think that's awesome. But this takes place between A New Hope, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, and Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. And it's got like Chewbacca and Luke Skywalker. And
yeah, and it ignores any other comics that have come, I think, at any time.
So I think it's got potential to actually be fun and have characters that people like in it and stuff like that.
It's got no subtitles. It's just called
the
Star Wars.
The potential for characters you like. Someone might like some of those characters you mentioned. Hope so.
And it's all drawn by Carlos Donda, who's a good artist.
What's he done? Another name.
I can't remember.
Stuff.
but I saw stuff and then I was like, oh, cool. This guy's good. And covers by Alex Ross, who I actually like as a cover artist. He's not my favorite interior artist.
Right.
But as a cover artist, he's pretty cool. And the cover I saw was pretty awesome. So I'm excited about that. I'm actually going to read a Star Wars comic.
Yeah, me too.
So, all right. And then we've got Marvel movie news.
Yeah.
Marvel's doing a Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yes.
This is featuring Star-Lord, Drax the Destroyer, Groot.
Keep going.
Gamora.
Keep going.
And it says here, most importantly, and then in all caps, Rocket Raccoon.
Yes! All right, that's what I was looking for.
Who's Gamora?
He's the tree.
No, Gamora's like the
that's
woman
Groot.
With the knives and magic spells or something.
I don't know.
I know Sodom. I don't know
is Raccoon.
Does she turn people into pillars of salt?
Yeah.
So that's cool, I think. Do we know who's directing that movie?
No, that's all they announced.
All that matters is that Rocket Raccoon is coming to the big screen.
Yeah.
coming to the big screen.
And Groot.
Just what everybody's always wanted.
Yeah. If they can pull that off, it will prove that Marvel has dominated the movie industry forever.
Yeah, it's so crazy that they're at the point where they can make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie and people...
And, like, it'll be popular. Yeah. Yeah. I'm assuming Thanos will be in it.
Yeah. I mean, Drax the Destroyer is, like, basically created to kill Thanos. So
to destroy Thanos.
Yeah, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I figured that, out on some lore. That's kind of going to be a lead into the next Avengers movie.
Wow.
And then that Captain America, the second movie, now has a subtitle, Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. So that's cool. Awesome. So that's they kind of set it up in the first one. Bucky gets, you know...
Falls off the train.
He dies. I'm doing air quotes if anybody can see that. But, like, you don't actually see him, like...
Yeah.
He fell to his death off of a train.
Yeah, he must be dead. He must be dead.
He's a normal Joe.
He's sniping people in the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the first movie, just like the cover of that Winter Soldier issue of Captain America. So, that's cool. Any movie based on a Ed Brubaker thing. Not Brad Ubaker, in case you were thinking that too.
Different guy.
Yeah, so that should be cool, except that it's got two directors, which is never a good sign, but we'll see.
It's weird, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll watch the good director.
And then Ant-Man is happening.
That's the best.
So weird.
Edgar Wright, who directed Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. And why did I say Hot Fuzz first?
Because Hot Fuzz is one of the best films I've ever seen.
Scott Pilgrim and Paul.
Yep.
Paul's actually a pretty good movie.
Hot Fuzz is like five films in one.
Yeah, he directed Paul.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Did he not?
No.
Someone else did.
Yeah.
Nah, whatever.
That's why it was only...
He directed it. Nope. Yeah, just like Steven Spielberg didn't direct Poltergeist. So who directed Paul?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. You guys don't know anything.
Some guy.
But he is directing this.
Yeah, and he did a bunch of test footage. I heard that one of the scenes showed Ant-Man running down the barrel of a gun, punching somebody's teeth out, which sounds awesome.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, and based on Irredeemable Ant-Man, supposedly. So that was a weird series by Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead.
That guy's got some pull.
Also creator of Misery this past week, which we'll maybe talk about a little bit. But yeah, so that's Marvel movie news. And then also they announced Neil Gaiman is doing a Sandman prequel.
Before Sandman.
That's not what it's called, is it?
No.
Oh, okay.
I bet it will be.
That's what everyone will call it.
And J.H. Williams III is doing the art.
That's awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's good.
That is great.
Yeah, people were really excited about this news. I was kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
Well, Neil Gaiman has his fans, people that refer to him as Neil.
Yeah, well, that's the worst.
And, like, they call Joss Whedon Joss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And inevitably, those people also call Tori Amos Tori.
It's true.
Oh, boy. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm excited about this because it's a comic by J.H. Williams, and it should be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, Neil Gaiman's best thing is Sandman, right?
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see him come back to it.
What was the last good thing Neil Gaiman wrote?
American Gods.
I didn't even like American Gods.
Really?
I like the episode of Doctor Who that he wrote.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
It was about the TARDIS becoming a woman.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it takes place before the first issue of... It's like about how he gets stuck in that little globe thing.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
All right.
You guys are super excited about that. All right, so then...
It's not very dramatic.
But also, Image announced a bunch of new books.
Yeah. About 1 billion
is the best.
So I don't know what any of these books are about. I hope it doesn't matter.
Nobody knows what they're about.
Okay, well,
all I know is people are awesome.
One is called Saviors. It's by James Robinson and Jay Bone. Is that the team that did Leave It to Chance?
No, it was.
Was that Jay Torres?
Paul Smith or God? Who's the guy?
Maybe it's Paul Smith.
Is it?
But I like Jay Bone's art a lot.
Yeah.
There's also Pretty Deadly by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who wrote Captain Marvel that came out this week with art by Emma Rios.
Amazing.
Who is awesome and did.
Strange.
Hexed. Most people probably know.
Yeah.
No, she did Strange, and she's doing the upcoming Doctor Strange season one book. And
oh, really?
She did the awesome Spider Island Cloak and Dagger issues.
Yeah. Yes.
Then there's a book called Oliver by Gary Whitta, who's currently writing the Walking Dead Telltale game, and with art by Derek Robertson, who drew like five issues of The Boys.
And every issue of Transmetropolitan.
Did he draw every issue of Transmetropolitan?
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, why couldn't he draw every issue of The Boys?
I don't know.
Why'd they have to get John McCrea?
He started crying whenever a superhero got hurt.
And then there's a book called Rain, which I'm assuming is a sequel to Hard Rain. This is by Chris Roberson and Paul Mayberry, who did... What do people know Paul Mayberry
dog,
from?
He did that.
Oh, yeah. And Aqualung. That's him as well, right?
Yeah.
Or is that Mark Andrew Smith?
No, that's him, too.
Mark Andrew Smith
wrote it.
Is the writer.
Yeah.
And there's a book called Lazarus, which is probably about Ra's al Ghul, so it's weird that it's being put out by Image. That's by Greg Rucka and Michael Lark, who worked together on Gotham Central, which I was just talking about today, and that is super awesome.
That's amazing.
And then they already announced this, but worth mentioning, Multiple Warheads by Brandon Graham.
Yay.
Yeah.
Who, actually, people, I think, know who Brandon Graham is a little bit more now,
which
is
definitely.
King City did pretty well, and then Prophet has been a pretty big thing. So that's it for news.
Awesome.
Was that good news? Also, I saw there was like a Deadpool video game coming out. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Marvel announced some more of their Marvel Now.
Yeah, there's a lot more Marvel stuff. I don't remember seeing anything other than the Sandman thing that was a big DC thing.
What, Before Watchmen?
Yeah. They showed some footage.
They were showing Before Watchmen stuff. Yeah. And I was like, what? This is already out, you guys. Yeah.
They showed some Superman footage, which...
I think DC's in the position now of, like, they're really dedicated to the idea of there being these 52 titles.
Yeah.
And they just had their last round of cancellations and announced some new books already we've talked about on here before. So the Sandman thing's a pretty big thing, but it's going to be a Vertigo book. It's not going to be a DC book. So. Yeah,
that's good.
I mean, it's all...
He's not part of the new 52.
He's not. He's not going to be in Justice League Dark, at least not yet.
Or Swamp Thing.
We'll see.
Yeah, so that is Comic-Con news. You guys want to do some viewer mail?
Yes.
Let's do it. I need, like, at least one more song.
It wouldn't hurt.
What would it be, though? Let's decide. You guys are the best.
How about the Iron Man theme song from the 90s
cartoon? From the 90s cartoon? Oh, geez. Or we could do the Swamp Thing cartoon theme song. Yeah.
That's great.
I think
we could all sing it. We love it so much.
All right, so first mail.
Okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, podcasters.
Yo.
You.
You guys are being nice. I have a deep and abiding love of Mark Waid's take on Superman's origin in Superman Birthright. Rather than having been able to debate this with other comics readers, I simply don't run into anybody who has ever read it.
Really?
What are some superhero storylines that you guys have read that you feel are not even underrated as much as they are completely overlooked? Mark Miller.
That's a good point, though. Like,
so he probably wants us to say, like, Kick-Ass, Superior, Nemesis.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but
no, he will never admit that people haven't read those. He loves himself too much.
So
he thinks everyone's read everything.
I think Mark Miller, who sends us questions, should like have his own like Miller World.
Yeah,
and people can go and can have a convention.
Yeah,
and when they can talk about Mass Effect and stuff,
that'd be awesome.
So I think Nick took notes. Nick is like so into the podcast now. He like takes notes and stuff all the
Nick
time.
Is
so
the greatest.
So what are your notes, Nick?
I have one really good one.
Okay,
my first one is Unstable Molecules.
That wasn't the one I was gonna say.
I just saw that on Nick's piece of paper.
Let me see what else.
Go ahead, go for Unstable Molecules.
Well, Unstable Molecules is cool. It was a short mini series that was based on these weird old Fantastic Four comics that were coming out at the same time as when Fantastic Four launched, about Johnny Storm and Sue Storm like living in the suburbs that totally didn't fit in with the rest of the continuity of the Fantastic Four comic. And then James Sturm, who like runs Center for Cartoon Studies and has done a bunch of great books like Gollum's Mighty Swing, decided to expand on that and make it into like this more modern series, but that still takes place in the 50s, and it's awesome, and it has great art.
Yeah, who drew it?
Nobody read it.
He drew it as well.
Is it him or Dean Haspiel?
I think Dean worked on it, too. Yeah, it was someone else cool. There was, like, such a great team up. Yeah.
But it's a great book. It's like has that kind of feel like Peyton Place, but it's got, like, a spy story in it, too. Yeah. I'd like to read those old issues, because I just recently was made aware of the fact that that is, like, a real thing.
Wait, really?
Yeah, those were real comics.
I thought
them being
that
like,
was just from the comic, from Unstable Molecules.
No, that's like a real thing.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to find out more information about that. Maybe we'll review them or something.
The one awesome one I somehow popped into my head was there was a Cable run like in the 90s Joe Casey and like Ladrone.
Yeah,
yeah, Ladrone.
And it was very like Jack Kirby influenced.
Yeah, and it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was amazing. I'm pretty sure. Probably a lot of people read it, but it's definitely not.
That was, I had like, never heard right of it. Right before or right around when Grant Morrison was doing New X-Men. It was kind of like one of the few exciting books at Marvel. And apparently Ladrone was either too slow or just whatever. And Marvel refused to give him a work visa so he could come work in the U.S. And so that's why he stopped working for Marvel.
Oh weird.
It was something like that.
Because
like,
X-Statics was coming out that time as well, right?
Yeah, so it was right around the same time, yeah.
But I don't care about Cable. Like, he doesn't really interest me that much. He seems like... like more to be like a symbol of what was wrong with X-Men books in the '90s and stuff. But I actually bought all those issues online because they're not collected for some reason. Yeah. And I read them and they're all like, so amazing.
Like Cable hooking up with like Maoist rebels and like trying to bring the X-Men revolution to like real revolutionary. It was crazy.
And then like there's one issue that's like post-apocalyptic and it's like Commandy. It's insane.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's weird. So good.
Good call.
What about you, Jared? What do you got?
Nothing.
Good. You can't think of
you guys both had prep on this. I got nothing.
You can't think of an overlooked storyline ever? Like something that you like that nobody, maybe people don't know is good?
G.I. Joe, Real American Hero.
That's not a
thing. It is.
That's not a superhero story.
Super to me.
Snake Eyes is Jared's hero.
He is.
Well, Nick has more written down. What do you got?
I just had one more. I had the Arkham Asylum by the Dan Slott.
Oh, the sequel.
Ryan Sook. Yeah. Oh, what is it called? Darkness... God, I forget what it's called.
But anyway,
it was Highland Madness something.
Yeah.
Oh, I got one. Batman is either a shadow over Gotham or shadow over Gotham, I think, which is Mike Mignola's H.P. Lovecraft take on the Batman thing.
Nice.
And it's like one or two issues out of print or three issues. And I'm like, really?
Should be back.
You can't reprint this book.
This one is pretty recent, but there was a series called The Order.
Oh, yeah.
That was like a West Coast Avengers initiative thing that was by...
It
was drawn by Barry Kitson. I can't remember actually who wrote it.
It was Matt Fraction.
Oh, it was Matt Fraction. And it was really good. It was just like a really dynamic team that had like great interpersonal relationships. And it was a cool thing. But
people didn't like it because it was like new characters.
Yeah. Which is why it was nice because they just had freedom to kind of do whatever they want. Yeah. Also, Robert Kirkman's run on Ultimate Marvel Team-Up. Which was like a book that just came and went because nobody knew who Robert Kirkman was at the time.
Yeah, it was enough. They put out four trades collecting the whole thing, and most of them are out of print now.
Yeah, so
it was just Spider-Man teaming up with crazy characters, but like telling a single ongoing story. It was really cool.
And this, I guess people know about this, but it's been like, I feel like this has kind of gone by the wayside, is Wolfman and Perez's run on New Teen Titans. I know a lot of like old
die hard Teen Titans
would
guys.
Be would be like, what it's are you talking huge, about? Yeah. It's huge, but I feel like people don't really know about it anymore.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think that's one worth checking out.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for your question, Mark Miller.
Yes, sir.
Writer of Nemesis and Superior,
and
Unfunnies.
Oh,
his best series. All right. So we got one more question.
Okay.
All right.
And this one is, hey guys. I like that people always greet us at the beginning of their questions.
Have to.
I think it's very polite.
It's got to get our attention.
He says, after reading the crazy shenanigans and happenings that was the 100th issue of The Walking Dead, let's just say I was pretty speechless at what I read. So I was wondering what moment in comics has left you guys speechless or just saying, holy crap. I wouldn't use that kind of language, but because of how surprising, shocking, or shockingly surprising it was. He also says, what was the best news you heard from Comic-Con? So we already answered that one. So we're like precogs.
Yep.
So surprising, shocking, or shockingly surprising moments in comics?
Why the Last Man was full of them. Most noticeably, at the end of that series, something happened to a character that was not good.
Spoiler.
I was like, what?
These are all going to be kind of spoilery.
Jared was like, I was shocked by this shocking thing that happened.
I'm not going to tell people. Go read Why the Last Man.
But I could just say, like, in Batman, there was that part. You guys know that part.
You could just be spoilerish. I mean, I'm going to be pretty spoilerish.
I could see not wanting to spoil Why the Last Man.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's the end of the series.
All right, Nick, what do you got?
Ruin some comics or something.
All right, here we go. Well, this one's not really ruin anything, but it was one of the first things I remember where I was like, what? When like the first issue of Thunderbolts when it was coming out.
Oh, that's true.
I remember
the
I was like,
one.
They were like, there's these new heroes coming into the Marvel universe, and like, because all the other heroes are in their terrible Rob Liefeld universe or whatever. And then I was like,
is that the same time?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
they were there to take the place.
Yeah.
And then like they show up and like blow up the Baxter Building, and you find out they're like the masters of evil disguised as heroes.
Yeah.
I remember when I read that, and I was like, what?
Yeah. That was
blew my mind
cool.
When I was a teenager.
I never actually read that Thunderbolt stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, I know. I know people were going crazy for it. I think I was already, like, I had, like, dipped. I was like, I'm out of here. I think, like, after Maximum Carnage, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I stopped reading superhero comics for a long time. Big one for me, like, this was just personally, when... In Cerebus, which I think we've talked about on here before, there's a part where Cerebus throws a baby off of a roof when he's the Pope. And I was just like, what? I just couldn't believe what I was reading, and it blew my mind.
Yep.
That's always a good one.
I was actually thinking Cerebus too, because there's some crazy stuff in that. Like when he meets Dave Sim. There's just some weird stuff in that series. It's bizarre.
Well, there's some precedent for that, though, like Fantastic Four meeting Jack Kirby.
That's true.
And then I don't know if the... Didn't Animal Man meet Grant Morrison as well?
Probably.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
You mean Grant Morrison met Animal Man.
It's true.
It was awesome.
What do you got? What do you guys got?
I got another one. A really shocking one that I remember was Gert dying in Runaways. Spoilers.
Yeah.
I remember I did not see that coming.
No, me neither. That
was pretty shocked.
That was a good one. That's one that people should go back and read too. Runaways is a good comic.
So good.
Yeah. What about you, Jared? You got something?
Yeah. Watchmen. Like, you get to the end of that, and it was the first time reading it, and there's so much crazy stuff going on, and I was just not smart enough to get all the threads put together. So when you get to the big climactic event, it just was, like, so utterly bizarre. And, it, you know, it's, like, what, over 12 pages of showing everything that had just happened. It was amazing.
Yeah, and then they just, like, threw it away for the movie. They were like, yeah, we're not going to use that. People think it's weird.
Yep, it's true.
It's like, I don't know, that movie.
But I'd say The Walking Dead has a lot of them.
Yeah.
I
was like, Walking Dead 100.
Like three or four. No, that was nothing.
Really? That was, to me, the most shocking moment in that entire series.
Really?
Yeah, like, just the way...
I will tell you three things that are more shocking than that.
Well, to you, maybe, but not to me.
Someone running across a prison yard and getting shot.
Yep.
Carrying someone?
Yep.
Really more shocking? Someone getting shot in the face?
Yep.
That was the 100?
The decapitation 100? Was probably the second most to me.
Yeah, that one was pretty intense.
Yeah, but I'm not saying surprising. I'm talking about shocking. Like, just the way it was delivered and, like, how emotionally kind of disturbing it was shocking to me. Like, it took violence in comics to, like, a different place.
Yeah,
the whole governor scene?
Yeah, but that's
way more than
this. I didn't find it as emotionally affecting as this.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the thing with me. Like, I was shocked because I don't usually have visceral reactions to comics the way I did with Walking Dead 100.
Yeah.
Another one I had was, it's kind of been undone at this point, but Spider-Man unmasking in Civil War. For some reason, I had no idea that was going to happen because I'd stayed away from
crazy.
It. Like, I read that and I was like, what? Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. That was pretty intense because I was like a huge Spider-Man nut. And I was like, at that point, I was like really into Spider-Man. And I was like, what?
I was kind of blown away when, when Batman got killed at the end of Final Crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I was kind of less because I was like, he's coming back.
Yeah, but still, like, just that. Like, to see the bones of, like, Superman carrying the bones of Batman was like a pretty crazy thing to me. There's also a thing at the end of Arkham City, which probably some people haven't played that yet, so I don't want to say. But there's, like, a major character that dies at the end of that game that is, like really surprising just because you don't expect it because...
Yeah.
It's just a crazy thing, but anyway, it's a hard thing to talk about these things without being.
We'll make a list of all these comics.
Yeah. So I think we got that. Also, so I don't know. I thought this was at the end. He says, "This is Michael K who sent that question." He says, "Also, a bunch of my friends, coworkers, and I mimic the air horn sound that you use in everyday conversation."
Awesome.
Just thought that you'd like to know. And then he says, "Burp, burp, burp, burr," which I think is supposed to be this. I'd like people to know that I manually do that. This thing just goes like this. Yeah. So I'm nailing it every time. I'm like Jimmy Cliff.
Yep. Who has a new album out?
I kind of actually mimic the sound to you every once in a while.
Do you?
Yeah.
But that's like after you go to Taco Bell. All right. So if you have questions, you can send your questions to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com or you can call the podcast hotline.
And leave us a voicemail.
At 703-539-CAST.
Or tap us out a telegram.
or tap us. You can send us a singing telegram.
You can tweet us questions, leave it on the Facebook page, or you can call us. But what was that number again, Kevin?
That number is 1-703-539-CAST.
Or just come in and tell us.
Yeah, or send a message in a bottle.
Right.
Indeed. All right, so...
I'm going to call the police.
Yeah. Do you guys like comics?
Yes.
I think they're swell.
We love comics, they're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
You guys know what time it is?
Scott Lobdell here.
Yeah, we should have Scott Lobdell on the podcast.
Red Robin doesn't exist. Oh. Or no, Red Ro- no, Wait. Maybe he'll come back in like a few years and be like, I made that up. Red Robin actually never existed.
Scott Lobdell here. Your life is a lie. All right. So this week, by virtue of the alphabet, we have a really good book first.
Yep.
And that book is Black Sad or Block Sod, A Silent Hell. This is a hardcover by Juan Diaz Canales.
Canales.
And Juanjo?
Yeah, I think so.
Juanwo?
They got some good names. Juanjo?
Guarnido?
Juanjo Guarnido. I think that's the correct pronunciation.
I like the fine Madrid accent you pulled.
Yeah, I like the extra syllable in there too. But
Juan Diaz Canales.
There you go. Yeah, so this is the fourth Black Sad
adventure
story. The first three were collected in a book I think 2 years ago.
Yep.
That came out from Dark Horse
called Black Sad,
our book of the year.
And those were from years past, probably going
the
back
first
as
one
far
was
as 2000. Like
2000. Yeah.
But this one is one that was is from 2010.
Yep.
And is coming out in English now, and
it's the blackest and the saddest of all.
it's awesome.
Yeah, but like Nick said, in 2010, the original Black Sad collection of those first three was our pick for best book of the year. It was amazing. And yet, we may think this one might be better.
I don't know that it would get book of the year. Well, I mean, there's still a long time for that.
It doesn't have the
having
weight
three,
of three. Of
yeah,
these
the three together to... was really amazing.
But this might be one of
the But I think this might be the best Black Sad story.
All right. For those who don't know, first, go pick up the first book. It's only $30. It's a nice big hardcover. These guys are from Spain. They are telling 1950s era crime noir stories. Black Sad is a private investigator. But the twist on it is that everyone in this book is a humanoid animal, like Usagi Yojimbo or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or like that.
They're not actually in this book, if that's what you were thinking.
No, not yet. This one.
Soon.
Yeah. Give me a pen. I'll fix that. And this one is set when he and his kind of, I don't know, muckraking journalist sidekick end up in New Orleans and end up on a case where they're hired to investigate something. But that's Diaz Canales' input. It's really cool stories, some good twists and stuff. The appeal for most people, though, is that Guarnido is just an amazing artist. He is intensely detailed in what he pulls off, and it's almost all this lush watercolors and... The second half of this book, it's not just a story. The entire half of this end of this book is him going over the art for this of how he made it. Because just reading the story, you'll be amazed. And
it's
then you'll
incredible.
Read this section at the back and you'll see how many times he went through a single panel.
Just to get
not
lighting.
Just sketching it, but painting it over and over and over again to get the lighting correct.
Well, and the lighting in this story is amazing. I mean, there are kind of two stories going on. One is the kind of revelations about the case that he's investigating.
Right. Yeah.
But the main story takes place over a whole day.
Yeah.
And the lighting changes as the story goes on. So it goes from this early morning kind of diffused light through this high midday light where they're at this amazingly rendered parade that is incredible.
Probably the best page of any comic I've ever seen. It's insane. So,
it's like, where's Wally or Waldo? If I don't know, Da Vinci had done it. It's so good.
Yeah, that's actually something that I said to a friend of mine last night. I was like, this is a really amazingly rendered Where's Waldo.
Yeah.
Although the art in Where's Waldo is kind of awesome.
Yeah, that's true. But,
not like this.
No.
Yeah, and I think the art style's gotten a little more cartoony.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so these humanoid animals have some of the most expressive faces. Like, he can just do these emotional registers that most artists cannot pull off. And it's astounding.
Yeah, this, almost legitimizes furry comics.
Yeah.
But, right. What it actually does is stand so separately from all that
that's
stuff.
True.
And,
true.
Is, an amazing thing. It's just great. I mean, you really have to take a look at it to see it. But imagine... You know, a Disney, a 60s era Disney movie, The Aristocats or Rescuers, that
but
kind
like
of sketchy style.
But with a dark noir crime story.
Yeah.
And it's all mixed up with musicians and New Orleans crime. And it's a really good story, too.
Yeah. And if you just want to check out Black Sad, I mean, you can just pick up this volume and read it and without, maybe dumping the $40 or $50 that the other volume costs.
$30.
Is the other one only 30?
30.
Oh,
it's only $30.
And is this one 25?
This is 20.
Well, get the $30 one because it's got three stories in it.
It's incredible. But if you like art, I'd get this one because it's that art stuff in the back is so cool.
Yeah. But anyway, already, just a great book.
Yeah. Amazing.
Amazing. Our highest
recommendation.
Our highest recommendation. All right. So up next, we've got a book called Bloody Chester. This is a new graphic novel by J.T. Petty, who I think is new to the graphic novel writing
scene. Never heard of him.
And this has art by Hillary Florido. I never know how to say her name.
Florida?
So I'm going to call her Hillary Florida. I know she works on The Regular Show, which is like a really great cartoon. Yeah. And this is her first graphic novel.
Wow.
And when you consider those two things together, this is a pretty well put together book, considering it's from two first timers.
Them some pluses. Yep.
Yeah. It's, but this really is a really cool story. What's going on in this story? Basically, there's like this guy who's kind of he's had a crappy childhood, and he's hired by a railroad company to burn down this town because the town's kind of causing trouble for a mysterious reason.
Blowing up the railroad.
Yeah, and they want to build a railroad through there. So he goes there, and it ends up that the town's been wiped out by a mysterious...
Maybe curse.
Disease or curse.
Mystery involved.
Yeah, and he meets up with this girl there, and they kind of... have a weird relationship. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a really hard story to describe because
so much is just characters interacting and what happens when
there's
they
a lot of cool conversational stuff, but at the same time it's also really creepy.
Yeah.
But it has a really cartoony art style at the same time. So I don't know. I know Nick, you had some problems maybe thinking that the story and the art didn't work very well together.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a problem because it's like the art style is very cartoony and it was very reminiscent of like I don't know, like something like Pandemonium or whatever that we read a few months ago. And it seems almost like a kid's book just from the art and some of the stuff that's happening because there's some goofy humor and stuff. But then there's like really crazy, intense things that happen and really messed up like adult things and cursing.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, I would say in that way it's comparable to maybe something like Brain Camp or Zombies Calling by Faith Erin Hicks. Like books that do have like maybe like weirdly
a cute style
things.
For a really messed up content.
But I kind of like the juxtaposition of the two. I think I don't know, for some reason it just works really well for me. I mean, maybe it can be counterintuitive to like creating of like the atmosphere that maybe the story intended, but overall I thought it worked pretty well.
It's such good art. I didn't have a problem.
I mean, it wasn't like a huge problem, but it's just like every once in a while something would happen and it would kind of surprise me just because I was like, well, that shouldn't happen in this.
Yeah, you would get like
thinking about it, there's some moments
like
a
cutesy conversation and then like some mutilated corpses.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But overall, I mean, I think we all liked it and thought it was a really good graphic.
And this is also just like, except for the creepy elements, it's just a straight up Western, which is nice to see some like genre stuff. That's
there's a good shootout.
Not a mixed genre.
There's like great twist at the end.
Yeah, like a really interesting moral decision that's made. Yeah. I thought it was cool and I thought it was well done.
Really good.
All right. A high recommendation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty high.
Should we start giving these things star reviews?
No.
480 stars.
No.
We'll do 75.
We'll do
500.
Whoa.
No, don't give. This is an abstract star review.
Yeah,
reviews.
Oh, okay. This is starring it up.
Yeah. So
like Black Sabbath.
Like Black Sabbath, for example, got -60 stars.
Yep.
But you don't know what that means.
But they are really negative stars.
Speaking of a book with some negatives.
Go on.
Up next, we have Captain Marvel number one.
Some negatives.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just one.
The first negative is that the art on the inside does not look like the cover, which is amazing.
Yeah, the cover to this is great. It's by Ed McGuinness, and it's really awesome.
That was Ed McGuinness?
It is Ed McGuinness.
Wow.
So, if you guys don't know who Captain Marvel is,
let me just say this is written by Kelly Sue DeConnick and with art by Dexter Soy.
That guy. Anyway, so if you don't know who Captain Marvel is, he was a Kree warrior that came to Earth and fought a bunch of things and then died of cancer.
Now I feel like I really know him.
I do.
And then,
Death of Captain Marvel, by the way, one of the best superhero comics.
And this is
really?
I think so.
Huh?
This Captain Marvel story is about Miss Marvel, who has been around in the Marvel universe for a very long time and kind of inherited the legacy and powers of Captain Marvel after he died.
Miss Marvel once was given to an alien to breed with while she was hypnotized, and the Avengers just laughed as like he took her away to rape her for 20 years. It was one of the worst moments in comics history.
Definitely look up that storyline.
Yeah.
And anyway, that doesn't happen in this.
that does not happen in this.
She decides to fully embrace Captain Marvel legacy and renames herself.
With some urging from Captain America.
Becomes Captain Marvel, and it's not much difference between this and a Miss Marvel book, except for the costume and the name.
Now, did Kelly Sue DeConnick write Miss Marvel before?
No, that was like Brian Reed.
I actually thought the writing in this was really good, though.
Yeah, the writing's great.
I thought her characterization and kind of the way they'd explore this female pilot that she's kind of hero worships a little bit. I thought all that was really good. But the big problem with this book, I thought, was the artwork.
Yeah. Like, I love the dialogue and the story was kind of, you know, it was cool, it was fun. But the artwork, just every panel just took me out of it, like, completely.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of, like a cross between, like, Carmen DiGiancarlo and Clayton Crane.
Yeah. That guy.
But, like, the lesser parts of both of them. I hate to just, like, bash
on. It's, like, weird and, like...
I think it would be, like, a really good illustrated style of, like, I need a pinup, but it's not a good style for
Yeah, everything's really stiff, and everything's really, really shiny in this. Like, one of the weirdest things in this, like, Spider-Man's costume is shiny. Why is it shiny?
Do you think it's the coloring? Or is this
all watercolored? I'm pretty sure
this
seems like an artist who does finishes as well as... I'm pretty sure the artist did everything. But
and the cover looks great.
Just
I mean,
artist.
Yeah, he does the coloring and he does it all on the computer, obviously.
I mean, yeah, it's very over rendered. But yeah, like I said, like the story is good, but the art just didn't do this for me. I mean, Nick, you said you weren't even probably going to read this anymore, right?
Yeah,
and you read every Marvel comic.
Yeah, like I liked.
I think I'll read it because the story was interesting enough to me.
Yeah. Well, I would like to say that I did not find the story interesting.
Oh really?
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah, for me, like you might continue with it. You said you're interested. Just for me, I was like, nope.
Done. Yeah, so that definitely not our highest recommendation. All right, so we should move on.
Yep.
Up next, we've got Punk Rock Jesus, number 1 of 6 by Sean Murphy.
Yes. Crazy.
And Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy's writing and drawing this.
Yeah. Which I was wondering if this was the first thing he's ever written. I don't know anything else.
I'm sure he's probably done stuff before, but I definitely, maybe. this is the first thing that I've known of.
Pretty polished if this is his first thing.
Yeah, a really well-written interesting story.
All right, a very simple premise. They take the Shroud of Turin, which is a medieval object, or possibly a ancient object, that was supposed to have lain on Jesus Christ when he was dead, and then his face magically, or I don't know.
Well, the blood on his
went
face.
Went into it. And so,
fakely.
Looking at this shroud, you can see the outline of Jesus' face. Yeah. So, taking this object, they are now going to take the DNA out of it and clone Jesus.
And then make a reality show about him.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, after injecting, impregnating a virgin.
Yeah, so first they have to do auditions to find the proper virgin to be the mother to bear the egg of
Jesus' clone.
But that's
just a smokescreen because they've already picked out the person they want, but they're pretending like they're doing a search because they feel like it'll make more people watch the show.
Yeah, well, I hate to break it to you, Kevin, but reality shows are a little scripted.
This is all
breaking down this simple story.
And being run by this crazy corporation that seems kind of maybe evil.
And then there's a huge intro part where there's this IRA assassin who has since cleaned up his act and turned states basically ratted out all of his IRA guys and now has ended up as the head of security for this reality show.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously everybody's going to try to kill
him.
These people because they're cloning Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, a lot of people. Like, people on either side are going to try to kill him.
So then the clone Jesus is born.
Yeah.
And then there is an added complication.
Then there's a twist and another twist and maybe a third twist.
There are at least two twists and possibly a third twist. But the end of this book is, I just remembered something.
What's that?
A shocking thing that I had read in a comic.
The end of Punk Rock Jesus.
The end of Punk Rock Jesus number one.
Yeah.
Is intensely shocking.
Yeah, I was like, what?
Yeah, it is crazy. And it is definitely worth reading. If you don't know Sean Murphy's art, he did Joe the Barbarian.
Yeah.
And
he's done some American Vampire.
Yeah, and he did a bunch of Star Wars stuff. He has an art style similar to like maybe Raphael Albuquerque that people might know.
And it's so good.
It's so good. And his art in this is amazing. This is black and white, but his art is he works with the black and white
really
well.
Also an incredibly dense issue.
Yeah.
It took me like an hour to read it.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this. We, covered the highlights.
Yeah, it's awesome, though.
Get your money's worth.
Definitely worth checking
out. This is really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if, I mean, I'm assuming Jesus is going to turn punk rock.
That's the thing, yeah. So that's, it's almost like a prequel to the title, which I'm quite excited about as well.
Yeah, I want to see punk rock Jesus.
Yeah.
Me too.
But so far, so good.
Yeah, really cool.
All right, moving on to, because I like to say moving on.
Yeah.
Revival number one.
This also is by, great.
Yeah, yeah. This is good, too. This is by Tim Seeley, who wrote Hack Slash and other things. Maybe some G.I. Joe comics at one point. And art by Mike Norton, who we all love.
From the Battle Pug.
And, and also The Coffin? Is that Mike Norton?
No. That's Huddleston, isn't it?
That is Mike Huddleston. Mike Norton drew some Power of Shazam.
And some G.I. Joe, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can listen to when we talked about Battle Pug and when we said some other things Mike Norton drew. But, Revival. This has an interesting story as well.
Yeah. basically, it's about a small town that's under quarantine because all of the people who have died have come back to life mysteriously. Not as zombies or anything, just come back to life completely healed.
Resurrected, yeah.
Yeah, just resurrected. And so a lot of people think, you know, it's the rapture, like when the dead come back and then Jesus is coming to kill.
And other people think it's a terrible bioplague, like CDC walking dead.
Yeah, so it's quarantine. Then this girl's put in charge of kind of being a liaison between the press and the people that are, you know, have come back. And so she's kind of sent to investigate all the things that happen.
Well, she works for like with the sheriff or whatever the local cop force is.
Yeah, but so. She's supposed to be like the in-between person between the police department and the press and stuff. And so she's sent out to investigate these people coming back. And it's pretty cool so far. There's a lot of really weird, creepy things going on in this town.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, everybody's back and healed, but they're all a little off.
A little bit.
Yeah, and so she goes to investigate some of this, and something crazy happens, and that's it.
But yeah, the subtitle for this on all the flyers and stuff call it a rural noir, and it's really creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. It's got like a, almost like a The Thing, like John Carpenter's The Thing feel a little bit, or like, and maybe, I don't know, like a Twin Peaksy kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
maybe
it definitely has a little bit of Twin Peaks going on.
Yeah, but a cool book, another crazy ending.
Yeah, it was awesome.
In the beginning, like the little kid who thinks he's seeing stuff in the woods.
That part's great. Well, I think he is seeing stuff in the woods, right? A cool book.
Really good.
Very atmospheric and definitely a joy to read.
This was Image, right?
This is another Image book. Yeah, Skybound, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, good for Kirkman.
Yeah. All right, so we still have like four books left.
Yeah.
This podcast is going long. All right, so next up, well, we'll talk about this for like 5 seconds. This is Space Punisher number one. And then it says after that, Space Punisher. Is this called Space Punisher : Space Punisher?
Yeah.
That's amazing. does it like in space no one can hear you punish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is by Frank Thierry. Nick told me he almost wrote down this was by Frank Castle. And Frank Thierry wrote, most people know him from the 5-issue miniseries Marvel Underground. And then this is drawn by Mark Texeira, who drew Danny Ketch Ghost Rider in the 90s.
Yeah, this is the eagerly anticipated Space Punisher.
And this is Punisher in space. He has a sidekick robot named Chip that he built.
Let me rewind. I think the idea of Space Punisher I was actually kind of intrigued by, because really throwing Frank Castle out into the Marvel universe is kind of awesome.
But it's not.
This is not that.
It's its own thing.
This is an alternate universe where there is a space going guy who happens to be the Punisher.
I was in awe of some of this.
Yeah.
There was awe going on. It may have full rather than some after it.
There's a space rhino. There's a space Green Goblin. A space Dr. Octopus.
And
but they're all like aliens.
And a bunch of space dialogue.
Spacey dialogue. Also, his spaceship. Did you notice his spaceship is named Maria after his dead wife?
Boy. Oh, nice.
So imagine like Fear Agent, if Fear Agent was a hot pile of garbage. It's fun. It's fun to read though.
I loved it.
Comics. Yeah. Comics for me hardly ever get into the so bad they're good area. And
that's
for me, like Rise of Arsenal number three was one of those.
That's true.
And Space Punisher number one has now entered the pantheon of like a comic so bad that I had a lot of fun reading it.
Yeah, it's so hilarious, man. I mean, he goes to a scene where he goes to like a space brothel and like Corsair from the Starjammers. All like a pimp and like
and there's a woman like, just because they're like, you know what Total Recall you tried to do three boobs. We have like a lady with like 12 boobs.
Yeah, there's a woman with 12 boobs.
Yeah.
And
all right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that's like, Space Punisher. Yeah. All right, so up next.
And wait for another bit of news for you Punisher fans out there. If you loved or hated this comic, go on YouTube and search for Dirty Laundry.
Oh, yeah, the Punisher short movie with Thomas Jane.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's all right.
Move on.
Up next is a comic that Nick loved. This is Sparrow and Crow, the Demoniac of Los Angeles.
Something like that.
That title is similar to the rest of this book. David, this is by David Ocampo and Jeremy Rogers and Jared Souza. No relation to John Philip Souza.
That's true.
Or, well, or me. What do I know? Nick, why don't you tell people about Sparrow and Crow since you love this comic so much?
Sparrow and Crow is about a guy who's kind of a paranormal detective.
Like you do.
Yeah. And he's sent to, in the very beginning, to exorcise this boxer that's been kind of just...
Exorcise.
Yeah. And he's been standing in the ring with his boxing gloves on. Whoever comes in, he like punches him to like death. And so he performs a... Exorcism on him in the ring.
I guess he shows him a picture and like draws a pentagram around.
It's pretty cool.
That's it.
Oh, he gets beat up a lot too.
Yeah, he is.
And then you know he gets involved in the mob and they want him to do something for them that's actually really messed up. But I don't know. I really liked the art in this.
The art was cool.
I liked it a lot, and the coloring I thought was really cool. I was trying to think of what it reminded me of. It reminded me of something like that I read recently, but I couldn't.
It reminds me of Dr. Leviathan.
No, definitely not that. That comic is great. I really like this.
I like the art. It's got a kind of like almost like a picture boxy kind of feel to it or something.
Think of who it reminded
but
me.
I just I thought the writing was really bad. I thought the dialogue was all really awful and like really like on the nose and like the mobsters show up to his house and he's like, hey, I didn't order Italian. Like it's all like stuff like that.
I think that's part of the thing I liked about it. It feels like it's supposed to be kind of supposed to be kind of like that, like a Benjamin Mara comic or something.
Yeah, I can see that. That was part of the thing I didn't like about it
because it's supposed to be like kind of over the top and goofy.
And I like Benjamin Mara comics. For some reason this one just didn't do it for me.
Yeah,
like it wasn't funny to me though. It was just like. It's like lazy.
Yeah, well, Scott Snyder and Gabriel Hardman both really liked it. They have quotes on the back.
Oh, well, Gabriel Hardman, everybody's favorite writer.
It's true. He's awesome.
Those guys are awesome. No, and I didn't like hate it or anything. I just had a little bit of. I mean, I'm gonna keep reading it.
Yeah, it's definitely it's something different.
Yeah,
which is kind
of yeah, cool. And it's definitely the art is really weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we got two things left.
Do it.
They're both good. This one, there's a lot of stuff to say about this. This is The Supernaturalist by Ian Colfer, adapted from his own novel, I believe.
Correct.
And Andrew Donkin.
Ooh,
Badonka Donkin. And this is art by Giovanni Reggiano.
Ooh, is amazing.
Yeah, remember that name, folks, because you're probably going to be hearing it on this podcast every once in a while.
All right. I would like to start at the bottom end of this, is that I was amazed by the art. But I was disappointed by the story because I felt like this was another case of a author of prose not adapting something well into comics. This has a lot of like text, like captions in it, and it just seems like they were trying to get too much story in, and so it just felt like a little overwhelming.
It's a little intense. There's a lot of writing, but I really like the story.
Yeah, I was surprised because usually I don't like that much text, but I thought it all flowed kind of pretty well actually, and. I was worried that the captions were going to be superfluous, but I felt like the captions were doing a good job of telling an internal story in the way that a novel does and in a way that comics do tend to have problems doing.
And the guy who wrote this is the guy, like, how do you say his name? Ian Colfer?
I think it's
It might be
he wrote, like, the Artemis Fowl series, which is his most successful thing. And there was actually two adaptations of Artemis Fowl that were actually drawn by the same guy.
The same guy drew
this? Yeah.
Oh, man.
And, I missed that. Yeah, we should get those back in.
Yeah, but so, anyway. So the main story of this is there are people who, what do they call them? The
supernaturalists?
Yeah, but they, I can't remember, like,
oh, God, what are they?
Anyway,
spotters.
Spotters, and they can see these creatures who are
kind of like ghostly parasites.
Yeah, who are attracted to people who are dying or in pain and attached to them as they're dying and suck their life force out. And so they decide that it's their job because they're the only people that can see them to hunt them down. And they live in this kind of futuristic society that seems very plausible.
Very dark.
Where giant corporations and entertainment corporations and just giant corporations run everything.
Yeah. Yep.
And the main character is this kid named Cosmo Hill.
Yep.
Who escapes from an orphanage.
A crazy orphanage.
And then
run like a medical testing facility. It's awful.
Yeah. And then kind of gains this spotting ability.
Yep.
And joins up with these other kids or
weird misfit crew.
Yeah. And they kind of go on adventures trying to stop these blue parasite creatures. And get kind of wrapped up in a big conspiracy with some companies and things like that. And yeah. It's a cool story. It's a very dense story.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot going on
in this.
It's
really long.
And the art is so great.
Yeah. And there's got some great twists. And I love a lot of the ideas in this. Like, there's like these lawyers that are just kind of like combat lawyers. And yeah,
the paralegals.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're basically like Judge Dredd or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except they work for private companies and stuff like that. Yeah. And, it's cool. And the action is really well done.
Yeah.
The art style is like kind of hard to describe. It doesn't really look like anybody else.
It's a little bit of manga-ish.
Yeah, a little anime style to it.
But it doesn't use a lot of those manga tropes, though.
No.
You know, it's not like the kind of thing where people have, like, beads of sweat on their head.
No, the backgrounds are way cooler than most.
Somewhere between that and, like, this Frank Quitely or something.
Yeah, or James Stokoe or something. Yeah. There's just a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it reminds me a lot of, actually, the Andy... like a friend of ours, Andy, who you'll probably see comics from at some point.
And the coloring in this is phenomenal.
Yeah, the coloring is great. It looks like it must have taken like 3 years to draw because it's like the backgrounds are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my other complaint about this is since this guy's obviously Italian, like I can only imagine that he drew this at like a European album size, which is like, and this is a little digest book, and I'm like, I want this art bigger.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
But that means like it's really good.
Yeah, right? That's what I mean. It's amazing. Yeah. I want to see it bigger.
Yeah. So I mean, and this is a great like young adult book too. It's just like very cool for like a, I'd say like a 12 to 15 year old or something.
Yeah.
Or well, just
and 12 and up.
And up. Yeah. So yeah, The Supernatural is definitely worth checking out.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, we got one more book.
I hope it's a good one because I'm tired.
It's not very good. It's Uncle Scrooge by Karl Barks.
Meh, that guy.
It's like just whatever. No, this is Uncle Scrooge, Only a Poor Old Man. Just so nobody thinks I'm serious, Karl Barks is like my favorite artist ever.
He's no Don Rosa.
He is. I love Don Rosa too. But so this is the second Fantagraphics collection of Karl Barks' Duck comics. The first was Donald Duck Lost in the Andes. And this is the Uncle Scrooge stuff, which I actually prefer to the Donald Duck stuff.
Yep.
And it's just absolutely incredible.
Astounding.
Yeah.
The stories in this, like, again, these are a mixture of, like, 30 to 40 page long stories and one-page gag strips and, like, you know, 2 to 8 page mini joke stuff or mini adventures and stuff.
And you were pointing out that it's laid out really well where they kind of space those out.
It's a good mixture of them. So you read a long adventure and then you have some little stuff to break it up and it doesn't feel monotonous or, you know, even just the same thing. And
the short one-page strips in this are so funny, man.
He's the master of the gag.
That's what he started out with on Scrooge was one-page. Yeah. Four color comics.
I mean, just for example, there's one where he's like he there's a taxi waiting for him, and he's like, oh, so when do you start charging? Like, as soon as I get in the car. And he's like, yeah. And so he just stands outside the car for a while. And then he gets in. He's like, what were you waiting for? He's like, the light was red, so I was waiting for it to turn green. It's just so funny.
Yeah, all the gags are about his, like, either love for money or, like tight, you know, wadness.
His penny-pinching nature,
And all the longer stories are, like, epic. They have, like, beginnings, middle, and endings. Like, they're, like...
Yeah, with just, like, crazy right turns.
And huge adventures.
Epic. They're so
And they're laid out so well, like, just artistically, where everything flows so perfectly from panel to panel. There's the pie fight.
Just, like, someone gets up. Everyone's throwing pies at each other. And it's just, like, one guy's hit with a pie. And just, like, all of his, like, feathers and the pie filling are all just, like, flying across the screen. He's such a good artist. Yeah. It's amazing.
If I have like one tiny complaint about this book, which is
too awesome
as like a fan of this material already, is that I feel like Only a Poor Man is not a great story to start it off with.
Right.
Because I don't feel like it's as strong as some of the more adventure driven stories.
This book or just in general?
Just in general.
Oh, so like late. Not
like I like
Scrooge
Back
stuff.
From the Klondike and the Haunted Castle stuff and all that stuff. And like
Back, you just mean in the first pages of this book?
Yeah, I feel like it was just not. not the best like way to start off the book, but I can also see why they do, because it establishes a lot of things about Scrooge. I mean, like his money bin point, and like that he likes to go swimming in and true. All that stuff. But that's like not even really a complaint. It's just like
I will say here, so Klondike, Atlantis, High Seas Adventure.
See, I feel like one of those stories.
Valley in the Himalayas. Those
I worry
are
that
all in here.
I worry that the first story won't hook people who are maybe not already interested in the material.
Yeah,
but it's still. I mean, just it's amazing.
It's highest.
I mean, we've talked about Barks before, the things that he does, and like the way he moves your eye around the page, and like just little things he does with
and the characterization and the.
If you like old Disney cartoons at all, this is like the best of that, anything Disney.
Yeah, and if you like comics. And if you like DuckTales, like if you grew up with DuckTales, that this all the stories are based on these stories.
Yeah, Carl Barks invented everyone in DuckTales except for Donald Duck, pretty much.
Yeah,
yeah. Did he not? He didn't create Donald Duck.
Mm-mm.
Was that Walt Disney?
I hope so.
The man himself.
He must have done something.
Yeah. That was Walt Disney.
A great book.
Yes.
Amazing.
Probably going to be in our best of the year.
Yeah. Yep.
And a great week for comics.
Yes.
We're back.
Well, we only took a week off.
That's true.
Yeah, but I mean,
we're back with the great weeks.
And we were back with a great week, a great 2 weeks. Yeah.
We got 2 weeks.
We got to consolidate decent couple of weeks into one really great week. Yeah, so that is it for episode 52 of Big Planet Comics. I do want to say that if you want to send questions, send them to those things we said earlier.
Please do.
Because we like to get questions. And so I thought this was pretty good. I think probably what we'll do with this 52 episode is we'll cancel a quarter of it.
Okay.
And then replace a quarter of this podcast with all new.
That's too shocking. Let's cancel an eighth, replace an eighth, and cancel a different eighth and replace an eighth.
So next podcast is gonna have Amethyst Princess of Gem World as part of it. All right, so I guess that's it for this week. You guys got any special goodbyes you want to say, any shout outs? Should we tell we'll tell Joe Zupkis happy birthday.
Oh yeah,
because he asked us to.
Yeah, happy birthday,
Joe. Happy birthday, Joe. All right, we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.